Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julietta Talevi, and taking your questions on the line this evening are David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Dwayne McCurry from FNB Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. And we kick off the show with Bloomberg content as usual. Here's a quick take from Grace Peters, a European equity strategist at JP Morgan, on what she thinks will drive growth in global equities in 2022.
The key thing that we think is actually going to drive Europe and global equities at large is corporate earnings growth. So to buy into European equities here, you have to really believe that you can get double-digit corporate earnings growth next year and in 2023, probably high single-digit as well. We think that's going to come through. Okay. For Europe.
Despite Omicron,
indeed. There's the element of does some of that demand get delayed into 2023, but for the cycle ahead, looking back where Europe's actually had pretty dismal earnings growth for much of the last post-financial crisis cycle, we think things could be different this time around. And the capex wave that comes through because of some of the climate change drivers, etc., is one of the drivers as to why we think Europe can perform this cycle.
Wayne, David, good evening to you both. And Wayne, I have to confess to a bit of an eye roll there listening to Grace Peters when she said that corporate earnings growth should drive equities in 2022. Well, as it always does. And the question was, what about Omicron? Well, it's just a variant in a pandemic that's unfolding. I mean, that's pretty obvious, right? So if corporate earnings do well, then there should be a solid base for your performance in the stock market next year.
No.
Or is it not so obvious?
No, it's not that obvious. First of all, the virus and its implications are almost out of the economic system, to be honest. I think it's out of the economic system now. But share prices are made up of two things. One is earnings, the other one is the valuation of those earnings. Now, earnings will probably be okay next year, but remember the world growth rate is slowing down. So the growth rate is lower, and of course this year you're measuring off last year's base, so the growth rate in earnings will diminish quite significantly, but earnings will still grow. However, interest rates going up and the long bond going up, the rating could fall. So I don't think earnings will support the market. I think it's going to come under pressure from the ratings. And we'll have to see if inflation stays above 4% in the US, it'll come under intense pressure. If it goes to 2%, it won't come under such intense pressure.
David, does that mean that if you are a fairly hardy of a stout of soul, that, and you have a bit of cash tucked away, as in fact I think Wayne has recommended sitting on cash, actually you both did in the last couple of weeks, and markets come under pressure simply because of the rating rather than because the company's earnings are going backwards, does it mean that if there is a bit of a fearful sell-off that you should be standing ready with your cash to buy shares?
I like to do that. You know, I like to be invested. I don't like to try and get my timing right. And if you like a business and you believe that over the next 5 years, you know, growth is going to continue, which is the way that you should be choosing shares, unless you're a trader, unless you're looking for short-term movements and bounces and that. And I think that, you know, if you look at Europe, there's some really decent companies that are emerging there. Netherlands is a hotbed of tech development that we're seeing now. So you can find decent companies, and to try and time it is very difficult. But I have to agree with what Wayne's saying. What it means is that we're going to get a year in which earnings catch up with ratings. So if a company is going to grow earnings at 15%, you're not going to get a 15% increase in the share price. You might get 5 or 6%. That's the derating that you're going to see. So, you know, in my mind, I'm preparing for a year like that where you're going to get decent earnings, but don't expect the same kind of growth or movement that we saw this year.
Okay. I'm glad that you mentioned if you're a trader, because moving back home to the South African market, there's one share that we have to talk about today, and that is Avenge. And there's a whole class of passionate Avenge investors who call themselves the Avengers, who at some point today woke up to find themselves millionaires. Billionaires, actually, even. The share price was up, I think its high was 45,216% on the back of a share consolidation. But Wayne, can you you explain, I mean, how is it that if you had, you know, if you were a shareholder of Avenge at 6 or 5 cents a share or even 2 cents a share, that suddenly your portfolio looks as if it's worth 15 million rand?
It's very simple. You own 100 shares that were worth 2 cents. Okay, now, if you've got a 2 cent share, it can either go up 100% or fall 50. You know, so no one wants a 2 cent share. So what they do is say, we consolidate, we're taking your 100 shares and we're giving you one share that's worth 1 rand. So the share might go up tenfold in price, but you own 10 times less shares.
Yeah. Okay. And it actually was a 500 to 1
in the same position, and they and Avenge was 500 times. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so in fact, unfortunately, so I guess when will everyone see the accurate values reflected in their portfolios tomorrow or Friday even?
JSE will change all the past share price data to reflect a share split, or in this case, a share consolidation.
David, unfortunately, you would have actually gone backwards, because if you made the calculation based on a share price of 6 cents, I think at the start of the week or maybe at the end of last week, then your assumption would be, and I think a viewer actually sent us a question on Monday night saying, is my assumption correct that it will be 30 rand a share? Yes.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the close, I think today, was just above 27 rand a share. So Avenge actually did go backwards.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, so and again, you know, for every 500 shares, you now only have one. And yesterday was the last day to register. So unfortunately, when you look on your portfolios and that, it'll take some time for, I think, the JSE to, or for the company to register that. But just be careful. Don't do anything silly in the meantime, because we've had a number of incidences that have happened. You know, normally we have a stock split, where you have 100 shares and you now get, you know, 400 shares. It's the other way around.
Yeah.
And sometimes people put on buying orders, you know, 10 times the price at which the share's trading. So, yeah, we have had lots of blipses in the past when these things have happened.
Yeah. Also, don't be tempted to tell your boss to, you know, stuff off, because you're a millionaire and are going to, live on your yacht, because you aren't, sadly.
I hate to say this to you, but there was a time, I think, when Avenge was trading at 30 before it went down to 1 cent.
I mean,
Avenge during the building and construction boom up to 2008 was a top company. It had massive cash on their balance sheet. They had 40% of the NAV was represented in cash. Mm. They had more work than they could do.
But that's
a cycle.
Yeah, I mean, Avenge is actually, and I suppose the reason why it had so, I mean, it had billions of shares in issue, and the reason why was because it had to go to the market a few times to raise cash just to get it out of the muck and to stay alive. And luckily, and actually I'm very glad that it is still alive, that it hasn't gone the way of Basil Reed or Esau Frankie or Group 5, you know, that it is still with us.
Yeah, they should call it Lazarus. It's risen from the dead. Yeah.
All right. Moving on.
New Testament, isn't it?
There's a question on Sibanye, which also came out with an announcement today saying that it's completed this 19.9% stake in New Century Resources. And of course, it talks about its investment in the circular economy. So in, you know, tailings plants, where basically, I suppose, circular economy, as the name suggests. Is this a good thing for the share price, and is it a good time to buy at this price of 49 Rand? Wayne, you were saying that you think this is kind of, you know, Sibanye's headed, probably maybe tested its lows, or is kind of at a price that you might look to buy it.
Two things. I think the commodity cycle has seen a downturn. I think we're near the bottom there. I can't see a severe commodity cycle going down more from this level. I really can't. If you want to, then go in and get Sibanye, but understand it's massively geared. So if I'm right, buy Sibanye, but if I'm wrong and the commodity cycle goes down, it'll be one of the biggest fallers, because it's got the most marginal platinum mines. Certainly its palladium assets are very, very good, but every mining company is now starting to spend money, and they have to, because they haven't for 6 years.
David, would you consider them?
You know, Sibanye is actually down about 20% this year. It was the stock of 2020, but it hasn't performed this year. You know, I like Froneman. I don't think he cares. I think he's repositioning the company. He's seen where he wants to go into the new green metals, and he's going to go there. So I think you've got to back management in this respect. But I also think that we're probably seeing the lows in commodity prices and some of the other metal prices that we've seen. So it won't be, it doesn't mean it's going to go roaring up. But, you know, if they can mine at these levels and mine profitably and efficiently, Sibanye is okay. You know, I'm a big supporter of Neil for Froneman.
More insights from Bloomberg, though. The team spoke with Malcolm McKenzie from Alvarez and Marcel on the expectations for activist investment activity in the coming year. Here is a snippet of that conversation.
As we see the supply chain disruptions and as we work through the Brexit disruptions and as we learn how to work within a COVID environment, what that means is the gap between the well-managed businesses and the not-so-well-managed businesses gets wider. And that's the sort of opportunity that activists like. And that's why we're predicting a 10% increase in activist activity over the coming year.
Good morning, Malcolm. Can you concisely provide a little bit more detail about exactly how you identify which companies are at risk of activism in the coming year?
Yes, we've got a model which we've developed over the past 6 years, which is, I'll make it concise, is a complex statistical model. But basically, it looks at what factors are correlated with previous activist activity. And we have about 45 factors, which are grouped around operations, balance sheet, governance. And that we then run that to predict how do companies rate on those factors, using about 2,000 companies across Europe. And that brings us out with something around 150 companies out of those 2,000 that we think are at severe risk of activist activity within the next 12 months.
David and Wayne, back to you. There's quite a lot of activist activity in Ascendus at the moment, but I'm not going to ask him about that to spare you. I just thought I'd throw you there briefly. There's a question that came through, thankfully, on RMI. Let me just get to it. The question is, it lives 10% up on RMI's disposal notice. It appears to be life and the old dog left. Does this mean that Rand Merchant Investments can go shopping for acquisitions? Or will part of it be returned to investors via dividend? Or will this money be used in more prosaic matters such as debt, pay downs, etc.? Still, it's good to see this uptick after more than a year. Say not the struggle, naught availeth. So in other words, they sold their stake in Hastings, the insurer, which they didn't buy too long ago, but they seem to make a very nice profit on it. David, what do you think they're going to do with that money? What is their strategy here? Does anyone really understand?
To be honest, I thought the strategy of RMI was to actually build an insurance, another insurer. You know, getting rid of their stake in Discovery, unbundling their stake in Momentum, you know, which they're competing with, and build a new a company using OUTsurance as the kind of base or add to that. But and I thought Hastings was part of that, but obviously not. So they're now going to be stuck. Once they've unbundled, they're going to have a lot of cash. Now, either they're going to give it back to shareholders and just stick with OUTsurance and UE or something, I don't know what they've got in Australia, or alternatively, just give it back to us or buy something. I don't know.
I mean,
Wayne's close there, you know. He knows. He, you know, he's probably pretty close in the RMB group, yeah.
If he knows, he's probably not allowed to tell us.
If I knew, I wouldn't be telling you, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I personally think it's going to get paid back to shareholders, but I've got no idea whatsoever.
The thing is, I suppose, if you had to look at a company and the way a market judges a company is on its allocation of capital, and if a company gets an offer for an asset that is just too good to refuse, would it be it's not in shareholders' interest for it to refuse that offer because it's got this vision of building up this offshore insurance business or whatever? Do you actually have to be quite pragmatic as a CEO of the company and say, we made such a good profit on this, we could maybe spend our money on something?
Yes and no. And I'm not talking specifically about Hastings or RMI. If you have a company that is just shooting the lights out, and it is so part of your overall strategy, there's virtually no price that someone can pay you that will say, just take it.
Yeah, okay.
If it's integral to where you want your business to go to, you're not selling at any price.
Yeah. Okay. Just in this case, they only had 30%. And therefore, they can't really control it. So they just get a dividend, or alternatively, they consolidate the earnings. So they can't really have control of the business. And, you know, I thought the plan was to build their own business. And you've seen it in RMH, you know, even though it's only a small company, it's got some properties there. But I thought that new management had more ambition and want to build up something other than the First Rand stakes that they had. In other words, almost like a private equity concern. So hopefully they do have those ambitions, because I think we need those companies in the market.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, so we wait to see what will happen with that money. And then there's a question from a frustrated viewer who says, compared with my US portfolio of stocks that are chugging ahead with 20% in gains, the performance of my JSE stocks are just miserable. So hold tight onto my JSE stocks, or look for more good stock performances on the US market, or just hold onto my cash. I'm not entirely sure that means, sell the JSE stocks. Or if this person has a portion of cash that they're not sure where to divert, Wayne, would you sell your JSE stocks if they're just not doing anything for you?
Well, the JSE hasn't done that badly this year. It's, I mean, it's about the best return in 10 years. It hasn't actually, I don't know what their shares are, but the all share index has not done badly. But everyone must understand that the last 10 years, the equity circumstances, in particularly in the United States, have been exceptional, have actually been abnormal. It's actually an aberration how positive it has been for equity in the U.S. in the last 10 years. Mm. You've had no inflation, no interest rates, and a very cheap market to start off with, and a booming economy. I mean, could it get better for shares? That it's probably the best circumstances for shares in 70, 80 years in the last 10. So do you think that will continue now that we're only talking about rising inflation and rising interest rates and economic growth rates slowing down? I don't think it can continue. Our market is reasonably valued. So I'd rather put money in South Africa right now than overseas. And I know that it seems an incredibly silly thing to do looking at the last 10 years' performance, but I honestly think it's the right thing to do given the valuation of the two markets.
Yeah. Dave, David, what would you do?
I just think there's a lot of excitement. You know, I'm not going to go into the valuation side of it because it's difficult to read. But if you think of where we're going, just the transformation that we are seeing, whether it's in the motor industry, whether it's in energy, whether it's in medicine, you know, all those industries are completely transforming. They're turning themselves upside down. And I see a lot of activity that's going to take place, a lot of excitement. It might not manifest itself next year or maybe 2 years, but certainly down the line, I think there's a lot going to happen in technology. You know, just think of from the cloud point of view, 5G, they're big themes. So I still think we've got great opportunities outside of South Africa. We just don't have those companies here. Yeah. But I'm not going to criticize or challenge Wayne on the short term, you know, on next year and maybe in the next year. That, you know, we have had incredible circumstances.
Yeah. Okay. And then just lastly, a last question before I get to your stock picks. The two questions actually on African Rainbow Capital, the one is just your view on it, and the other one is specifically, please ask your panel if this means, the 10 cent investment in Time Bank, does this mean that African Rainbow Capital's share price will rocket? Actually, haven't seen what it's done.
I don't think it's going to rocket. It operates at a huge discount to NAV, and Time Bank needs a lot more money to go into it. You know, this is a competitive environment out there. The other banks aren't sleeping. The other banks are massive, and you ultimately can't make money if it's a race to the bottom on fees. You've got to lend out. You've got to extend loans. And you need huge capital to do that.
Yeah.
Now, $1 billion is a drop in the ocean for a bank. Ask Discovery.
Yeah. Oh, although actually Discovery did put out an update recently. They seem to be doing very well. They're opening a lot of accounts. They've got, what, 9 billion or so capital in, you know, within the bank now and on deposit. David, African Rainbow Capital does seem to be creeping up, though.
Yes. They're doing a deal a day. You know, every day there's a new deal, particularly in the financial services segment. So they're really trying to build something out, you know, through acquisition. They're going to have to put it around and actually make it work. But they're certainly aggressive on, you know, in that area. And in the fintech space, you know, not in the traditional marketing. But I'm just watching from the side and saying, I'm going to see where this all ends up and whether or not, you know, you're going to make money out of it. I think I'm looking at MTN, I'm looking at Vodacom in the same way. You know, and I think they've got the infrastructure, they've got the people to actually do very well in the fintech space, you know, in fintech area. Through transfer of money, I don't think Africa is a very sophisticated financial services, you know, continent. But if it comes to shifting money, I think you know that's a fairly attractive area.
Yeah.
But I watch them and I just hope they can actually close the gap.
Mm. Okay.
I'm talking African Rainbow Capital.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, getting to your stock picks this evening. Wayne, you're going for Standard Bank.
Yes, good old-fashioned South African share. The ratings look very low. Earnings are going to recover nicely. We've seen all the trading updates are very positive from all the banks. And it's lowly rated, so I don't think it's terribly exciting, but I think it's a relatively safe place to put your money given the current set of circumstances.
Mm. Okay. And David, how about you?
I'm looking at Aspen, and the reason is that, you know, the market shot this share price up to 280, and it's come all the way back to 212 or 215, that area. So it's given up a lot of those gains, but the fundamentals look okay. They've sold off a lot of businesses. They've reduced their debt. In fact, they've now got cash. They're doing a lot of things in their factory. I mean, even this vaccine, you know, the increase in vaccines is something, you know, positive. It means more through flow through the factory. I think things are looking, you know, on an evaluation level, it's looking a lot more attractive than it did at 280.
Mm.
So, and the chart looks good. It's starting to, you know, it's corrected that boost. It just looks like it's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, finally. It's been a long, hard slog.
I didn't know Shapiro was a value investor.
He surprises us always.
Surprises us every week.
Value. I didn't know
he's normally a growth investor.
Yeah.
You didn't think that you would be put on the same platform as Nick Billion. Yes. I shall leave it there. David Wade, thanks very much for joining us this evening. David Shapiro is from Sassin Securities. Wayne McCarry is from F&B Wealth and Investments. And just a reminder to tune in tomorrow at 10 o'clock. We'll be bringing you the live broadcast of the Gauteng Medium Term Budget Policy Statement. That is here on Business Day TV, 10 a.m. tomorrow. Stockwatch, of course, will be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.